B-Pod Studios.
Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, the guy whose divot you just landed in, Charlie Nance.
Welcome back. Once again, we are Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at @CLT_golfguy. And this week on the show, we're going to spend a bit of time taking a deep dive into the last couple of weeks on the LPGA Tour, major championship weeks. Brittany Altomare is currently eighth on the Solheim Cup points list and therefore is set to make her very first team. Fresh off playing the last 4 weeks, she took a break for this one, and we caught up with each other on Wednesday afternoon. Also, Ron Cyrak of ronsyrak.com and the Golf Channel was on site both in France for the Evian Championship and in England for the AIG Women's British Open, and we'll discuss those two majors as well as the current Solheim Cup situation, as Captain Julie Yingster has a lot to think about in the next couple of weeks. Also, freelance golf journalist Ron Mintz will stop by to talk about last week's Wyndham Championship in Greensboro and the beginning of the FedEx playoffs on the PGA Tour. So let's get started with LPGA professional and my former Symetra Tour Pro-Am partner, Brittany Altomare. Brittany, before we get into anything else, and there's a lot to talk with you about, one thing that always strikes me when I try to review your season to a certain point when we're talking is you were born in Massachusetts, raised up there. You went to college in Virginia. You play very well in Korea and Europe. But there's something about the state of Arkansas. If the LPGA could just put you in Arkansas like six times a year, you might win the CME Globe.
Yeah, my golf coach, Justin, always says, Mike needs to make that a major. They just need to make Arkansas a major.
What, I realize that for all of us, there are certain courses that fit our eye, but what is it about that place? Because I don't think you ever finished outside the top five there.
Well, I do like the golf course, which is actually kind of funny because the first time that I played a practice round there, I was like, oh, golf course, it's just a person that fades the ball, and I don't really fade the ball.
No.
And then, you know, I ended up playing, like, super well there. But it's such a fun event. Like, the community gets super involved, and we always have really good spectators and attendance there, and I have a great host family that I've been with now for 4 years, and they just make me feel like home. And I mean, I look forward to seeing them like every year. And this year they came out to watch me play in Palm Springs at the ANA too. And I mean, it almost feels like a little piece of home on the road. Like, I feel like I'm going home every time. So I just love that event.
Now you're out on the road. Well, we were just talking about this off air. You play an awful lot of dates, and most of the girls on the tour do. I'm just going to throw out a number, 25, 26, 27 weeks a year. You're out playing. Give me a percentage. You staying with host families as opposed to you staying in hotels or other housing situations out of that?
I'd probably be 60-70% hotel, I would think, and then the rest are host families. It seems to be, and I'm not sure why, it seems to be at the beginning of the year I do more host families, and then like middle to the end of the year I'm more in hotels. Not exactly sure why it's that way, but yeah.
Brittany Altomare is our guest taking Dead Aim. I want to talk with you first about what happened in France. Now, a couple of years ago, you actually lost in a playoff. I thought you were going to win that damn major. One thing that struck me first was the course itself. I remember talking with you after you came back from the Evian a couple of years ago, and we both talked about what a booger the 18th hole was. It was one of the longest par fours on tour, and it was nasty. And I guess I didn't pay attention last year if they changed it, but they really sort of neutered it down. It's a very short par five now. I'm sure the players like that a lot better. How did you feel about that change to the golf course?
I thought it was a really good change because it's still not a gimme par five, I don't think. I mean, you still have to – it's still really narrow off the tee. You still have to hit the ball in the fairway. And then, you know, it's over – the green's kind of set on an angle, and, you know, it's still over water. Your second shot if you wanted to go for it in two. And you could get a pretty nasty downhill lie even if you were in the fairway. So, I mean, you still have to hit two good shots to get there in two. And then, you know, if you lay up, you're on a downhill lie with a wedge, which I know you have a wedge in your hand, but still, you know. So I thought it was pretty good. And I think that, you know, coming down the stretch, if there's two players that were, you know, in contention together, you know, it's definitely a risk-reward hole where, you know, somebody could go for it in two and, you know, make eagle or bogey depending upon what happens. And I thought it was a good change.
I got very excited after round one. In fact, I think I even sent you a message. You shot a 6-under 65 to open that championship, and you were right there, I think, maybe tied second or solo third behind Paula Creamer after the first round and with your past experience there. But it seemed that weather became an issue, I think, for your half of the draw in the second round, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was pretty good. And then we got called in for lightning. And then we got back out, and it was okay for a hole. And then at the wind, I mean, I don't know, it just got, like, super windy all of a sudden. It was definitely a lot harder when we got back out there.
How do you deal with those delays? I had this happen. I was competing in a four-ball championship earlier this spring, and we played like junk on the first day. But the second day, we got it going, and we were in contention to make the cut and get into the match play. And then we had two different rain and lightning delays that cumulatively lasted over 3 hours, and we were never the same either time that we went back out. How do you mentally go through that? How do you fight through that? What is your process of getting through a rain delay?
I try to, you know, eat something and just kind of talk about anything else but golf. Because, you you never know how long those delays are going to last. You know, hopefully they're short, but most of the time they're long. And, you know, just keeping your mind off of anything but golf, I think, really helps. And then when you go out there again, just, you know, training yourself to just refocus on what's going on. So it's definitely hard to do. And sometimes I feel like I'm really good at it, and other times I feel like I'm not. So...
Is there a train of thought to doing this when you know it's going to be an extended delay? And when you're pulled off a golf course for lightning, you know it's going to be longer than an hour. It has to be by the laws that people who govern these things go by. Is there a thought to almost just hitting the complete reset button and saying, okay, you know what? I'm going to take a shower. I'm going to get out of these clothes. I'm going to start the day over again. Or does that take you too far out of the moment?
I don't know. I've never done that exactly, but I do think, you know, hitting the reset button is probably a good idea. Just kind of like going out and just, because, I mean, there are long days when that stuff happens. So, you know, to feel fresh again when you go back out there for your last 9 or 5 or how many ever holes you have left, feeling fresh, I think, is definitely the key.
Brittany Altomare, LPGA professional golfer, is our guest taking Dead Aim. We're talking about really her whole season, but the last couple of weeks in general, and then something special that could be on the horizon here on Taking Dead Aim. The rest of the Evian Championship, round two was a challenge. Even par in round three and just one over in round four. And I remember you tweeting out that the greens won this week. There were other complaints about that golf course in terms of maintenance. I think most loudly from Lexi Thompson. What was it about that golf course? And, I mean, with you have played so well there before, did you have a problem with the greens? Was that a shot at the maintenance of the golf course? Or was that just, you know, you just weren't up to it that week?
No, it had nothing to do with the golf course. I mean, I know a lot of people have their opinions about it, but quite frankly, like, I like it there. I mean, it's just a tough golf course. It's built on the side of a mountain. So, I mean, like, you never have a flat lie. You know, the balls are above or below your feet, and the greens are very, they're goofy. You know, there's a lot of slope to them. But I just didn't have my best putting that week. And, you know, if you're struggling on those greens, it's going to make for a long tournament. it's a tough golf course, but I like it because it's tough and it's challenging. And you definitely have to think. I mean, you have to hit the ball in the right spots on the greens. You're going to have, like, a 50-footer where, I mean, I had one that week where I there was, if I played the break I was supposed to play, I probably would have put it off the green. So I like had to play it away from the hole and have a 7-footer to save par. I mean, it's just a tough golf course.
That's a tough mental thing to do, to take aim at a putt, and the result you're actually going for is a 7-footer to come back?
Yeah, I mean, it's just a tough golf course, but that's one of the reasons why I like it. And, you know, I truly believe if you go into that golf course with a good attitude, you're going to be more than half the field because they just don't have the same attitude, so...
Both the PGA Tour champions and the LPGA Tour are the only two professional golf tours I know that have majors in back-to-back weeks. What is it like? And you know, these were two. You couldn't get two more completely different kinds of golfing experience than going from the Evian to the AIG Women's British Open. First off, what are your thoughts on having back-to-back majors?
It was definitely tough. I mean, when Sunday was the round ended, I like could not wait to get on a plane on the way home. Just majors are just tough weeks, and but I was lucky enough. I played Woburn my first year on tour, so it wasn't like I had to go and learn a new golf course, which made it like 10 times easier than it would have been if I had to go learn a new one. So,
what is the mental grind like to go? I mean, because you hear everyone talk about these major championships and how, you know, you just at the end of that week, you're just completely spent. And then knowing that you've got to basically go control, alternate, delete, because Monday we're doing it all over again.
Yeah, like I said, I think I was lucky this time because I had known the golf course the second week at Woburn. So I just putted on Monday. I just kind of gave myself a little bit of a mental day off to just relax and, you know, de-stress from the week before, and I think it really helped.
In years past, the AIG Women's British Open, when I've watched it, has been held on you know, what I consider traditional links golf courses, what we all do. I was unfamiliar with the golf course that you guys were playing on. Obviously, you were not. But if I just walked into the room, I couldn't have told you if you were playing in England or if you were playing in Hackensack, New Jersey. If you're playing a major with the, you know, when you hear British Open, you grew up here watching it early mornings on the weekend. You know what kind of golf courses that we're expected to see. Mm-hmm. Do you prefer the traditional links kind of golf or more along the lines? Because that was really American golf, what you guys were playing last week.
Yeah, if I had to pick, I would definitely choose a links. I mean, we never get to play that throughout the year, so to be able to play, it's just a totally different type of golf, and, you know, over the years, I've really enjoyed playing it. Like last year when we played St. Anne with them, that was probably one of my favorite golf courses I've ever played. I mean, it's so much fun. I mean, it forces you to hit good shots. I mean, otherwise you're in these deep bunkers that you just have to, you know, I think last year I had to play backwards out of one of them. So, I mean, it's fun. And I think the British Open is supposed to be really hard and challenging. I mean, the conditions test you. And, you know, this year we got super lucky with the weather. I mean, there was really no wind and it was beautiful out. But, you know, Woburn was in such great shape, and I really enjoyed being back there, so it brought back some good memories.
Brittany Altomare is a professional golfer on the LPGA and my friend, and she's our guest taking Dead Aim. Okay, I've put it off long enough. I have been so excited to see your name bandied about like it has been bandied about. Just to give some backstory here, I first met Brittany when she was on the Symetra Tour. In fact, I think you hadn't turned pro very long. You had not been a pro very long when we first played together in a pro-am. We played 2 or 3 years together in pro-ams. I have never been around someone who I think has worked harder to get where you are right now than you in not just golf, but in any walk of life. And it's made me very happy. And now to see your name mentioned with the words Solheim Cup next to it, as we're heading into this week, and God bless you for taking the week off. You are in 8th place on the point standing list. The first 8 are automatic qualifiers. How do you feel about this?
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited. You know, it's hard. I mean, like, you try not to think about it when you're out there, but obviously I want to make the team. And I want to make the team better too. So if like I'm that person that's going to be on the team, like I hope to help the team win. I don't know. I can't really say much about it because I'm not sure.
Well, answer me this, because I know that this had to make you feel good. The story that came out was, I guess, did you play a practice round with Stacey Lewis, or you had been out and she's the one who came out and said, even if I'm not on the team, Brittany Altomare needs to be on the team. When someone of that standing and that status and that stature in the world of women's professional golf says that kind of thing about you, and knowing, you know, you're just this girl from Massachusetts who played golf in Virginia and has come up through the symmetric, it has to blow you away, doesn't it?
I think it was Beth Ann that did the article, and she asked me about it after, and I was like, words can't really describe, coming from Stacey, that means so much to me, but when I thanked her for saying those really nice things about me, she was like, it's true, and you have to believe it, it means a lot coming from her, Like I said, I hope to make the team, and I hope to make the team better. So,
now, when does that announcement take place? How many weeks are we out from the announcement of the automatic qualifiers for the Solheim Cup?
The team gets announced after Canada. So they play the Scottish this week, and then we have next week off, and then Canada. So
now, are you going to play in Canada?
Yes, I'll be in Canada.
So you could solidify everything by your performance in Canada.
Yeah.
Do you think about that? I mean, is that added pressure? Because you've had really a tremendous season. You've had very few missed cuts. Financially, you've done very well this season. I was joking with you about you being a millionaire in your pro career off air. But this is now a really big deal. Is that something that's going to weigh on your mind? Or is it something that you're able to sort of compartmentalize and say, you know what, if I play well, it's going to take care of itself. I just need to go do what I do.
I've been trying all year to do that. I mean, like I said, it's always in the back of your mind, but I think when I've done the tournaments that I've done really well in this year, the tournaments where I've just been able to just focus on each shot individually, and, even if it wasn't a Solheim Cup year, like, that's when I've played my best, and, some weeks it's harder than others, but at the end of the day, for me, it's always just been about thinking and just immersing myself in each shot, because then it just takes away, if you hit a bad shot, thinking about the past and thinking about the future. So I think just for me, it's just been about focusing on each shot as they come.
Get you out of here on this. Brittany Altomare, LPGA professional, our guest taking Dead Aim. I wanted to ask you about this, knowing what all you've gone through in your career to get where you are. How blown away are you by Shibuno coming out in her very first tournament, much less a major, but her very first start on the LPGA Tour and winning a major? That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, I haven't really gotten the chance to meet her. I didn't really see her that last week, but, she seems like such a great person. She's always smiling, and she seems super happy, and I think that's so good for women's golf, and I don't know if she's taking her status this year or next year, but I can't wait to see her out there more often. I think she's going to be great for the game.
Are most of the professionals have the attitude that you have, or is there a quiet resentment that, she was able to do this right out of the box, she didn't pay her dues, she doesn't know what it really takes to be a professional? Do you have any of that cattiness?
Not on the LPGA, I'm pretty sure. I mean, at least I don't hear about it. I think most of the girls are very open and welcoming, and that's actually have been my experience. I mean, a lot of the older girls have really helped me out, when I was a rookie. So I think everybody just likes to see everybody do well because it helps the tour that way.
She's been on the show several times over the years, and although this goes against protocol, I don't care. I am seriously rooting for her to make this year's Solheim Cup team. She has worked so hard. Love that girl. LPGA professional Brittany Altomare. And when we return, Ron Cyrak of ronsyrak.com and the Golf Channel takes Dead Aim at the past 2 weeks, major championship weeks on the LPGA Tour and the upcoming Solheim Cup, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com. Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Ron Syrak is a past recipient of the PGA of America's Lifetime Achievement Award in Journalism and was on the beat for the last 2 weeks, both major championship weeks, overseas on the LPGA Tour. Ron, let's begin. Before we discuss the Solheim Cup, let's discuss the last two majors on the LPGA circuit, the beginning in the mountains of France at the Evian. This is a unique golf course, and I don't think I'm stepping out of bounds saying that it's a golf course that I don't think people appreciate on TV for the elevation change and the way fairways and greens are cambered, the difficulty of this golf course.
Yeah, it's a course that tests the endurance of players and caddies and the media who venture outside of the media center. It's quite a hike around there, and they have done a really good job since it became a major championship. It's undergone two renovations, and the improvements on the course are significant. And the fact that that tournament ended on time on Sunday shows how much better the golf course drains now than it did originally. They got 2 inches of rain and on Saturday, and were able to play on Sunday. It's a challenging golf course, and it produced in Jin Young Ko, the number one player in the world, won the tournament. So it was a good test.
You know, it wasn't just the rain on Saturday. It was the rain, and then there was wind. It sort of reminded me of how sometimes the Open Championship with the men, and to a certain extent the women, can be really decided by the bad end of a draw when it came to weather. Those people that played in the afternoon on Friday really, really got the short end of the stick out there.
They did, and you know, they did a brilliant thing on Saturday, moving the tee times up, because as they were finishing, the lightning alarm is ready to go off. It's just right there. And the fact that they had moved the tee times up and they went off split tees using both number one and number 10 and went in threesomes, and the timing was perfect. It was one of those cases where the willingness, the ability of a tournament to adapt to conditions really made it the best possible playing conditions for the competitors.
You mentioned renovations to that course. I don't know if this was done last year, and I just didn't pay attention, but I remember a couple of years ago in particular, that 18th hole used to be a very long par 4, and if you got any kind of rain or wind at all, it was a booger bear of a par 4, and I really like it now as a short par 5, but it still demands good shot making coming into that green because of the contouring.
Yeah, when I first started going to that tournament in 2003, it was a par 5. And then when they did the renovation, when it became a major, they made it a par 4. And then they realized that it's better as a par 5, so they swapped out number 13, which had been sort of a ho-hum par 5. They made it a par 4. They returned 18 to being a par 5. And, it's a risk-reward hole. You saw Jennifer Kupcho there. And she was trying to win the tournament. You know, she went for the green out of the rough. They cleared the hazard by about a yard. And made birdie on the final hole, but she was trying to make eagle. And it's having a par 5 as a finishing hole is something that I love, because the opportunity, and there's a hazard in front of the green, the opportunity for a multiple shot swing on a hole is there. Somebody can make 3, somebody can make 7. A lot can happen. Way, way, way better golf hole now than it was when it was a par 4.
Ron Syrak of RonSyrak.com and the Golf Channel is our guest, Taking Dead Aim. Thank you for bringing up Jennifer Kupcho. similar to how impressed I've been at the play of Matthew Wolf and Victor Hovland and Colin Morikawa on the PGA Tour and what the impact they've been able to make in a very short period of time. I just learned Jennifer Kupcho's name in the spring when she won the inaugural Augusta National Women's Invitational Amateur Tournament. And, you know, bang, here she is in France. And, you know, she was, you know, way far back. And then all of a sudden you took your eyes away from it. You went back to the leaderboard and you're like, wait a minute, what's going on here? And like you said, she really made a run at winning that golf tournament. I mean, we may be jumping the gun. There's been a lot of people that had great starts, but I was really impressed by her dogged determination out of the gate at this golf tournament.
Look, she's trying to keep her card off the money list. And she got to the 18th hole. That wasn't the priority in her mind. She wasn't protecting second or third place. She was trying to win the golf tournament. And I see in both Kupcho and Maria Fassi, I see two young women who are not only really, really talented players, but they're mentally aggressive, they're mentally tough, and they want to win. And in some ways, too, I'm sort of hoping that they become role models that doing 4 years of college is a good thing, you know, that not only has college golf gotten so much better and you can really hone your skills in college golf, but the maturity difference between being 18 years old and being 21 or 22 years old is enormous. And I see in both Kupcho and Fassi, and we saw it at Augusta National, and they're ready. They're ready to be stars. And they are not afraid of being stars. They want to embrace the notoriety that's coming with it.
I think it's a good indictment of the women's amateur game. We've known that the men's amateur game has just grown by leaps and bounds, and these guys obviously coming out on tour and winning immediately at 20, 21, 22, 23, that they're ready to go. And the fact that these two women have been able to be so competitive so early is a good indictment of the progress that the women's game has made as well, especially at the college level.
Yeah, I think colleges, the competition's better, the courses are harder. You know, it used to be, for both the men and the women, if you were a really good player, that you needed to leave college and go out on one of the developmental tours and hone your game there. But now you can do it in college. Going to that, having decided that the team events now in match play, I think is also a huge, huge plus. That makes the players much competitively tougher. And I think that moving of the NCAA to match play is going to translate into Ryder Cup and Solheim Cup wins down the road, because Europeans had always in the past played way more match play than the Americans did. Now the Americans are learning to make that mental adjustment. When you play in match play, you gotta be aggressive, man. You gotta try to win every hole, and you gotta play every hole strategically. It's way different mentality than stroke play.
Ron Cyrak of RonCyrak.com and the Golf Channel, our guest Taking Dead Aim. Let's move ahead to last week's major championship at the Woburn Golf and Country Club. Look, I'm going to just throw my bias in all of this. I really love watching the Open Championship when it's on those links golf courses with the wind blowing and the nasty rain, and whether it's the men or the women, I enjoy seeing that. When I first tuned into this golf tournament over the weekend, to be honest, I was like, are they playing in New Jersey? It looked like just an American golf course. As a journalist covering the event, did it have that feel to you as well? That there was something missing?
Yeah, it is an American-style golf course. It's a Parkland course. But and that's, it's disappointing. I mean, I feel that way, too. I feel that way when Ryder Cup and Solheim Cup goes to Parkland golf courses. I want to play links courses over there. But they did a brilliant job setting it up. And they presented the hardest setup for the course on Sunday. And the quality of play on Sunday, this was my 173rd major championship, men's and women's combined. Quality of play on Sunday was as good as I've ever seen. Lizette Salas shot 65. Jin Young Ko shot 66. Morgan Pressel shot 67. Shinuba wins it by shooting 68, 31 on the back nine, birdie in the 18th hole. You couldn't have asked for more. I think the presentation was first rate, high quality all the way through.
Ron, I think historically, Ben Crenshaw won his first professional tournament he ever entered, but it was just a regular tour event. Fuzzy Zeller famously won the first Masters that he ever entered, but it was not his first golf tournament. I had never heard of Shibuno until this tournament. Come to find out, it wasn't just her first major. It was her first tournament. This is crazy for someone. Maybe John Daly's story of winning at Crooked Stick is like this, but I could never imagine someone's first tournament ever as a pro being a major and having the wherewithal to do what she did on Sunday to hang on and win.
Yeah, she had won twice on the Japan LPGA, but this was her first LPGA tournament ever. And, I said on Golf Channel Sunday morning, I said, I guess just feeling she's playing with house money. She's got no expectations. She's just out there having a blast and enjoying it. And I felt if she gets to the back nine in contention, she could win it because she had already shot 30 on the back nine twice. She shot 30 on Thursday, 30 on Saturday on the back nine. Comes out on Sunday, shoots 37 on the front nine. You're thinking, okay, she's going away. Then she shoots 31 on the back nine, birdie the 18th hole. And, one of the signs of nerves is you leave putts short. That putt that she made, the birdie putt she made on 18, would have gone 7 feet past the hole if it didn't hit the hole. I mean, she was not afraid to try to make that putt, and she did.
Well, and like you said, there were real pros firing gas at her. Morgan Pressel looked as good as I've seen Morgan Pressel look in a long time. Jin-Young Ko, who's, arguably or inarguably the best women's player in the world right now, was what you expected her to be. Lizette Salas, great to see this tournament from her. She was firing on all cylinders. And sometimes, you hear the saying, sometimes a major wins you. You don't win the major. No, Shibuno went out and won this major. Those other ladies didn't lose it. She won it.
Yeah, as I said, she's holding on. She starts today with a two-stroke lead. She shoots 37 on the front nine, and she's got players making a run at her. She's got Jin-Young Ko, the number one player in the Rolex ranking. She's got Lizette Salas, who is playing the round of her life. She's got Morgan Pressel, who's rolling back the clock of 11 years since the last time she won the tournament. All making a run at her. Sung Hyun Park was making a run at her. Everybody in the last six players on the golf course all had a chance to win. At one point on the back nine, there was a five-way tie for the lead. And then when the tie got broken, it was because three people made birdies, not because people were going the other direction. So the amount of pressure that was put on her was enormous. And she played in the final group on Sunday in a major championship. Had the birdie the last hole to win it, and she did it. And I have to tell you this, too. She is an absolute delight. She came into the interview room. We said to her, did you know what that putt meant on the 18? She said, oh, yeah. I was watching the leaderboard. I knew what it meant. Then she says, I was already planning my celebration.
And I'm saying, how great is that?
The next words out of her mouth is, I'm also really hungry. It's like, wow, what a breath of fresh air.
Let's switch gears for a second. Ron Cyrak of RonCyrak.com and the Golf Channel, our guest taking Dead Aim. This is a Solheim Cup year. Solheim Cup, like the Ryder Cup, one of my favorite events to watch. And as I look at the automatic qualifiers as they stand right now, the top eight in the points rankings on the American side, this is going to be a Solheim Cup of a lot of fresh names.
Yeah, this is a changing of the guards. Right now, not qualified for the American team, not qualified, are Paula Creamer, Morgan Pressel, Christy Kerr, Stacey Lewis, Michelle Wee, Brittany Lang, Brittany Lincecone, Angela Stanford, Jermaine Pilla. Nine players who've played a combined 50 Solheim Cups. None of them are on the team right now. As the team stands right now, Julie Easter is going to have at least five, maybe six rookies on the team. The pressure on her to pick an experienced player, she only has two captain's picks. And the pressure on her to pick an experienced player is going to be significant. And maybe Morgan Pressel played her way onto Julie's radar screen with the way she played at Woburn in the Women's British. Maybe Paula Creamer did with the way she played at Avion. Through the 30 holes until the rain delay came, Creamer was playing lights out. Maybe Stacey Lewis, she's probably going to have to pick somebody experienced because there's so many people out there now who are going to be playing their first Solheim Cup. And the European team was in that same situation in Des Moines last time around. They had six rookies on that team. They played really well. They just ran into a buzzsaw. The Americans played out of their mind. The tables could be turned this time around. That European team could be more experienced. They could be tougher, and they're playing at home.
One thing that I noticed, and in full disclosure, Brittany Altomare was on the show a little bit earlier, and I was talking with her about this. I was blown away by the gesture made by Stacey Lewis on her behalf. It was something I could never imagine on the men's side, someone saying, and it was basically, look, even if I don't make the team, this girl needs to be on the team. And it was coming from someone with the gravitas of Stacey Lewis. That was a strangely refreshing and magnanimous gesture, I thought.
Altomare's got a 7-point lead over Allie McDonald for the 8th and final position there. In my mind, whichever one of those two doesn't make the team automatically should be a captain's pick. So, because they both have played well enough that they deserve to be on the team. So that, in my mind, leaves Julie with only one captain's pick, which early in the year, Julie told me, I think my captain picks are going to be determined by injury and pregnancy. In my mind, I thought that meant Michelle Wee and Stacey Lewis.
Right.
Two players who, because of injury and maternity leave, aren't going to get enough points to be on the team. But Michelle's hurt now. She shut it down. She's not going to play. And Stacey's not been on form the last about 5-6 tournaments out there. So I do think Altomare and Allie McDonald both deserve to be on the team. And then that one other pick is going to have to be somebody like a Paula Creamer or a Morgan Pressel or a Stacey Lewis.
Christy Kerr is hanging out in 10th. She is right there, too. Does she?
Yes.
Would that be the easy way out for Captain Inkster?
Well, you know, she's not played well of late, but there's two things that Christy does really, really well to have on your team. One is she can putt. And, boy, in match play, you know, you see that. And she can putt. The other thing is she annoys the heck out of the other team. And that's, you know, she's the Sergio Garcia of the LPGA. You know, she gets under the skin of the other team. It's good to have a player like that. So it could very well be that Christy will be that person. Julie is good friends, knows Paula Creamer better. They've been friends for a long time, and that may still be in there. But, Christy would be the easier one because, as you said, where she is in the points rankings, you're not dipping down to, like, 18. You're going to take number 10. And also those intangibles she brings. Julie also is going to need, because she has so much inexperience, who's the team leader going to be in that clubhouse? She doesn't have a Dottie Pepper. She doesn't have a Julie Inkster, you know. So having a Christy Kerr could be, or, you know, Christy, Paula, and Morgan all fit that team leader profile. They all bleed red, white, and blue. They're rah-rah people. Very emotional, so that she's going to need somebody like that.
From RonCyrak.com and the Golf Channel, that's Ron Cyrak. And up next, freelance golf journalist Ron Mintz takes Dead Aim at the Wyndham Championship and previews a little bit of the FedEx Cup playoffs, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Freelance golf journalist Ron Mintz is a must-follow on Twitter, at Mintz Golf, that's at M-I-N-T-Z Golf, and is a longtime Greensboro resident. Ron, let's begin with something that's near and dear to your heart and your memories in the game of golf, and it's a big part of the PGA Tour's history and history of golf here in the Carolinas, and that's the Wyndham Championship, the Greater Greensboro Open, whatever name it's had. It's been part of the tour almost as long as the tour's been around. It now serves as the final stop before the playoffs begin on the PGA Tour calendar. I said this on last week's show, and I really mean it. At the start of the compressed season, I looked at the calendar. There were two things I was sure about. 3 weeks after the Masters and 2 weeks before the PGA, the Wells Fargo Championship was going to have an unbelievably world-class field. And because of the big bonus money available at the Wyndham Championship at the conclusion of the year, they were going to have a better field than they were used to. Ron, I wasn't just loud on both counts. I was wrong, rather, on both counts. I was loud wrong on both counts. I know they put a nice smile and a good coat of paint on it, you know, last week in Greensboro, but they couldn't have been happy that the guy who won the big bonus money was probably sitting naked on a beach somewhere.
Well, he wasn't the only one. I think only only one out of the top 10 were there, and that was Paul Casey. And as it ends up, Webb Simpson did move up into the eighth spot, or maybe even higher. But it just didn't seem right for the people that were winning all the money not to play in the tournament. I know it wasn't a requirement. And I know I've talked to some local media guys, Ed Harden, who's covered this tournament ever since he's been alive, I think, and he said that he's always heard that talks underway to change the format for next year because, you know, obviously they weren't happy. But on the side of the players, and I'm trying to be neutral, although I'm very much in love with that event. I've watched it growing up, and but they, you know, they wanted to rest up for the Northern Trust, and so I understand that, but it just wasn't set up right. And if you look at the FedEx playoffs, there's no way you can win the FedEx Cup that I know of unless you play in the Tour Championship. So that's what they need to do somehow with the Wyndham is ensure that everybody comes. What really bothered me is they gave away the checks and had the presentation at Liberty National on Monday, or it could have been Tuesday.
Yeah, that kind of kind of bothered me too. I was like, wait a minute, what are we talking about here?
Yeah, that just really poured salt in the wound. And I guess you couldn't expect all the players just to fly into Greensboro to pick up a check, but of course you and I would have done that.
Well,
so it was a disaster, I think, basically, and I'm sure they'll work something out, but no, it didn't go good this year.
Well, see, and I think this is a really, really tough problem that the PGA Tour, I think, is going to run into more and more. And like you, I'm always on, until they do guaranteed appearance fees, okay, then I cannot blame any player for skipping any tournament because they are independent contractors. And if they don't play well, they don't get paid. And they need, and I get all of that. So I'm always, like you, kind of on the side of the players. On the other hand, this schedule is not going to get easier. Next year, we're going to come right out of the FedEx Cup playoffs, or excuse me, right out of the Open Championship, into the Olympics, into the FedEx Cup playoffs, into the Ryder Cup. There's no, you know, it's going to get harder and harder for players to find breaks in the schedule, and a part of me really has to feel for some of these sponsors. The PGA Tour does not play. They're requiring 5 to 7 year commitments when you sign up to be a sponsor on the PGA Tour, and we're not just talking $1 or $2 million a year. These are $10-15 million a year commitments from sponsors. And just as I was upset by Brooks Koepka's comments the other day about how I don't practice unless it's a major, I thought that was sort of a slap in the face to some of the sponsors on tour. You know, when Wyndham is ponying up this kind of money for a bonus and they don't have to be there, it's a slap in the face to the sponsor there too. And I think the PGA Tour is running a risk of slapping the face of too many sponsors once too often.
I agree. And Brooks had said maybe a week or 2 weeks, well, he said at the WGC in Memphis that if mathematically he needed to go, he would play in the Wyndham, which meant if there was any chance he wouldn't win first place of $2 million, he would come. And so he really did have appearance fee money, if you think about it, Charlie. I mean, he knew he was going to win the $2 million, and he had a chance to pick up another $1.5 million if he'd won the tournament. So that could have been a very profitable weekend, but he didn't do it. Now, Justin Rose, it backfired on him. He would have won $500,000, but he didn't show up, and he ended up being knocked out of the top 10. So at least one of them may change his mind next year.
Freelance golf journalist Ron Mintz is our guest taking Dead Aim. Always a great follow on Twitter, at Mintz Golf. Anything about golf that's worthwhile, you can get it from Ron on Twitter. One thing that I had a discussion with last week with a couple of people, and I wanted to get your take on it. As impressive as Brooks Koepka was in Memphis, and really as impressive as he's been all year, but especially the conversation about the way he played in Memphis and how he was putting so fearlessly compared to other people and how he just seemed to be on the offensive that entire tournament and just, you know, this and that and the other thing. As impressive as he is and has been, and I have been impressed by him, I got to tell you, what I have watched from Colin Morikawa and Matthew Wolf and Victor Hovland, it has been the most impressive thing that I've seen in quite some time. Brooks Koepka is playing with house money. He made $5 million just in the majors this year. A 10-foot putt in Memphis wasn't going to faze him one way or another. Those guys, what they've done with 6-7 chances to get your tour card, otherwise you're playing in the minor leagues, I'm blown away by those guys this year. That is the most impressive thing I've seen. What do you think?
Oh, it's impressive, but to have three guys like that come out the same year is unheard of. And it sold a lot of tickets on tour this year, I can tell you that. And look at the USGA. Do you think they've ever changed a rule because of one player before?
Well, maybe, you know what, though?
Maybe they didn't, but it should have been changed years ago, but I think it finally hit them when he would probably have his tour card had he not had to remain an amateur.
Oh,
after he won the US Amateur.
Look, there's no there's no probably to it. He was only 3 or 4 points shy of getting his tour card, and with his finish at the US Open, he would have had it easily. I think I almost hated that they did it in the moment. If the USGA wants to make that change, make some time lapse between the end of the year with what happened to Hovland and when you do it, or even make the announcement, you know, at the U.S. Amateur coming up at Pinehurst. Do it then. It just seemed to me like they almost you talk about pouring salt in the wounds. That to me poured the salt in the wound of Victor Hovland of, oh, and by the way, now we're going to change the rule.
Yeah, I think they were a little embarrassed by it. I don't know if it's happened in the past where it actually affected someone getting the card. It probably has. But this one was so obvious. And yet he was gracious about it. He's a mature young man. I'm really impressed by all those three. And, they're the future of the tour. I mean, that's just – they're coming out of college now, 2 years early, most of them. And they've been playing on the junior circuit and – it's just a different game now with the kids starting so young.
Well, you know, Matthew Wolf was in contention at Greensboro, and that's even after making triple bogeys and double bogeys in the first two rounds, and he's still on the first page of the leaderboard come Saturday morning. There's a lot of, and I hate to, and I know how much you revere Mr. Palmer, there's a lot of Arnold Palmer potential in Matthew Wolf with the way he plays and the way, you know, his swing looks a little different, and he's always kind of aggressive out on the golf course, but the people really respond to him, and I think there's potential there for him to become, you know, that John Daly, that Arnold Palmer that everybody roots for out there.
Well, I agree. He's charismatic. I love his attitude. He handles himself very well with the media and fans. So he's also going to be a delight for sponsors that want to join the team. So that's my biggest fear, Charlie, is I see so many young players come out and they win a little money, they get comfortable, and they sign all these big endorsement deals. I think that's been Ricky Fowler's problem. I told the story the other day, and I may have told you, if you go to a tournament, usually after it's over and you do all the media, the guys will go out to dinner or something. When Ricky gets through signing autographs after the media session, his agent grabs him, and he takes him to a photo shoot or a commercial or an appearance. He's got so many commitments because he does so many endorsements, and I think that's hurt his game. And I'll go so far to say that's maybe the reason he hasn't won a major yet. So success sometimes can hurt you early in your career if you let the money get to you and you get complacent. So,
oh, look, I think there's no question about that, and you can't just throw Fowler out there. I think the enormous amount of money that is out there for these guys has affected, I call it the hunger. You know, a competitor hungers for competition. Tiger didn't care if it was the Dubuque Open or the British Open. He was coming to stab you in the heart no matter what every time he teed it up. And these guys, because they're multimillionaires without winning a golf tournament of any significant standing, it's easy to get soft. It's easy to lose that hunger because you're not having, you know, Jack Nicklaus always used to talk about how when he would get in trouble business-wise, and there was a couple of times that Nicklaus Golf was on the verge of bankruptcy, he knew that he had to go out and perform on the golf course to bail out his business. That'll fuel your hunger. And Jack Nicklaus was the greatest. I'm not talking about this in the 60s. This is in the 80s. You know.
Yeah, and Arnie was the same way.
Right.
Arnie used to travel in a car with his wife and kids sometimes, and from one tournament to the next. And those were in the early years, obviously. But I've heard stories of pros winning a tournament and getting a $600 check, which is basically what it cost them to get there. So those were the tough days, and now it's completely changed. But that's just, I guess that's just the way the world is, man.
Yeah, money provides us a good segue here. Ron Mintz, freelance golf journalist, at Mintz Golf on Twitter, our guest taking dead aim. Let's talk big bucks and no whammies. Let's talk the FedEx Cup playoffs, and we moved into the first phase. At a golf course, I'm not sure if it's a great golf course. I think it provides some great visuals being right across the Hudson from New York City, but the pros teeing it up for real. And this is a big one at Liberty National because basically they're going to trim the field, you know, by a third, if not two-thirds, at the end of this week.
Yeah, it's definitely changed. I like the new format. I think what happened, I'm just guessing, that players skipping one or two of the tournaments in the last couple of years because they knew that they had enough points to make it to the next to the last one. Now you can't. Well, Paul Casey's skipping this week because of his ranking, but most of the guys are going to have to play in all three of them, and I like that. I didn't understand how they could set up a FedEx Cup, which is a playoff, much like, we'll say, football. A football team couldn't just decide not to play in the playoff game, but in golf you could have. So now they fixed that, and Casey felt like it was worth taking a week off to get rested. And, of course, Henrik Stenson decided just not to come at all. He was 85th, and he knew he had to get in the top 70 this week. And he's not really done that well recently in FedEx Cup. So he just WD'd from all of them, and now he's playing in the Scandinavia Invitational in a couple weeks in his homeland over there. So
doesn't that speak to exactly what we were just talking about? Stenson is a multimillionaire. He hasn't had the best of seasons. He's 85th. All he has to get to is 70, okay, which probably is a top 25 finish, a top 30 finish to win enough points to do that. And instead of the competitor inside saying, okay, I'm going there and I'm going to get inside the top 70, he says, you know what? I got more money than Davy Crockett. I'm just going to chill out here in WD.
Well, it reminds me of last year. If you'll remember, Rory didn't have a great year. Well, not this current year, but in 2017, I'm not sure. But he had publicly said he wasn't sure he was even going to play in the FedEx Cup because he just was having a bad year. He didn't feel good. His swing was off. And I thought to myself, boy, his phone is going to ring because he just signed about $200 million in endorsements with Nike and TaylorMade, and they're going to want to see their logos at the FedEx Cup. And sure enough, in 2 days, he announced he changed his mind. So, you know, that was bizarre too. But, you know, Rory, like I said, he signed at least $200 million we know of for 10 years, and all the other sponsors too, and appearance money when he goes over to Europe. So, yeah, that's another example of the money and the hunger. And of course, he just got married and he was still sort of on his honeymoon. So a lot of things go into that, but it's not like the old days. I mean, players skipping tournaments just blows my mind sometimes. And not just the really top 10. I mean, there's players in the top 75 or 100 that will skip events. I don't know. I mean, I've never traveled tour full time. I mean, all the events, but it is exhausting. I mean, I tell you, and winning is another thing. I mean, look at every time I see a player win a tournament, and then people say, "Well, what do you think about him this coming week?" I don't usually pick him because when they get through doing all the media stuff and celebrating, I mean, and winning alone, coming down 18 holes will wear you out if it's a close match. And I've just always felt like it's hard to win 2 weeks in a row. It really is. So I get the fatigue factor. I really do.
Again, he is a must follow for golf fans on Twitter at Mintz Golf. That's at MINTZ Golf. That's Ron Mintz, freelance golf journalist. I'd also like to thank LPGA professional Brittany Altamare and Ron Syrak from ronsyrak.com and the Golf Channel for their time and insight this week. A reminder, should you just be catching the last little bit of the show, wonder what all we've covered today, no worries. Subscribe to the Taking Dead Aim podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, BPod Studios, Spotify, all the usual podcast outlets, and it will automatically download to the device of your choice. Additionally, a great source of constant golf updates is our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. Featured there right now. Links to articles on the latest goings-on in and around the game. Weather-wise, well, hot but perfect in the Carolinas to tee it up and let this game continue to haunt your soul and break your heart. And hey, if you do put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep it in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter at @CLT_golfguy, and I'll see you right here next week, Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.